Hello, and welcome to the Summer 2011 podcast for the journal Pediatric Physical Therapy. I'm Donovan Stutel. This month, articles on suit wear and positioning in children with cerebral palsy, autism spectrum disorder in a school setting, and more. This podcast is brought to you by the Section on Pediatrics of the American Physical Therapy Association. The section seeks to promote the highest quality of life for all children, people with developmental disabilities, and their families. First this month, here is Editor-in-Chief Anne Van Sant with her editorial, Making Progress.
Pediatric physical therapy is making progress, and there are several signs of our advancement in this issue. First, our lead article by Bales and her co-investigators represents a randomized controlled trial investigating the effects of suit therapy. We are beginning to demonstrate our willingness to carefully design and execute studies that provide validity for our clinical decision-making. Bales and her colleagues are to be commended for carrying out what is considered the gold standard of research design. The findings of their study illustrate that suit therapy was as effective as their control condition. That alone should give us pause in considering the effectiveness of this newer therapy. Whereas the work by Bales is not definitive, it is a study to be seriously considered by therapists using suit therapy. Second, in this issue, we can see that we are seriously engaged in preventative therapy. The report by Nervick and colleagues documents the detrimental relationship between motor development and overweight and obesity in very young children, and the authors advocate for the role of physical therapists in preventing this major health risk. We need to continue to recognize our role in health promotion and seize every opportunity that presents to solidify our profession as practitioners of choice in combating the effects of inactivity that without question lead to obesity. I would also point out the article by Martinson and Hibbleman, which addresses prevention and illustrates the potency of our interventions in preventing hip subluxation in children with CP who are not ambulatory. Those of us who have practiced long enough to watch the secondary effects of hip asymmetries manifest in children with more severe CP welcome this study's findings that positioning children in abduction and extension is as effective as tenotomies in preventing migration of the hip. We also realize that such intervention takes time and commitment from families, but the outcomes are clearly worth the effort, preventing not only hip dislocation, but I might also theorize a positive benefit on the control of progressive neuromuscular scoliosis that is so common in this group of children. Third, all these articles illustrate the potency of our interventions when applied at proper dosage. And that provides the challenge for the future. We are making progress, but we need to continue to evolve to a point where we are asking and answering even more explicit questions regarding dosage in very well-designed and executed studies. Our upcoming Section on Pediatrics Research Summit should provide timely direction for further development of our research questions on dosage.
Our first research article is The Effect of Suit Wear During an Intensive Therapy Program in Children with Cerebral Palsy by Amy Bales, Kelly Grieve, Carol Birch, Rebecca Redder, Lee Lin, and Myra Huth, all of Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. The purpose of this study was to examine the effects of suit wear during an intensive therapy program on motor function among children with cerebral palsy. 20 children were randomized to an experimental, therasuit, or a control suit group. The children participated in an intensive therapy program. The Pediatric Evaluation of Disability Inventory, PEDI, and Gross Motor Function Measure, GMFM-66, were administered before and after the program. Parent satisfaction was also assessed. No significant differences were found between groups. Significant within-group differences were found for the control group on the GMFM-66 and for the experimental group on the GMFM-66, PD Functional Skills Self-Care, PD Caregiver Assistance Self-Care, and PD Functional Skills Mobility. No adverse events were reported. The authors conclude that children wearing the TheraSuit during an intensive therapy program did not demonstrate improved motor function compared with those wearing a control suit during the same program. That was The Effect of Suit Wear During an Intensive Therapy Program in Children with Cerebral Palsy by Bales et al. Next, the relationship between body mass index and gross motor development in children aged 3 to 5 years by Deborah Nervick of Franklin Pierce University in Concord, New Hampshire, and Kathy Martin, Peter Rundquist, and Joshua Cleland. The purpose of this study was, 1, to investigate the relationship between obesity and gross motor development in children who are developing typically, and 2, to determine whether body mass index, BMI, predicts difficulty in gross motor skills. BMIs were calculated and gross motor skills examined in 50 children who were healthy, aged 3 to 5 years, using the Peabody Developmental Motor Scales, 2nd edition. Pearson chi-square statistic and stepwise linear hierarchical regression were used for analysis. A total of 24% of the children were overweight or obese, whereas 76% were found not to be overweight or obese. 58% of the overweight-obese group scored below average on the Peabody, compared to 15% of the non-overweight group. A significant association between BMI and gross motor quotients was identified. Regression results were non-significant with all 50 subjects, yet showed significance when an outlier was excluded. The authors conclude that children aged 3 to 5 years with high BMIs may have difficulty with their gross motor skills. Further research is needed. That was The Relationship Between Body Mass Index and Gross Motor Development in Children Aged 3 to 5 Years by Nervick et al. Next, effect of weight bearing in abduction and extension on hip stability in children with cerebral palsy by Caroline Martinson of Habiliteringen Björkenien in Borås, Sweden, and Kate Himmelman of the Queen Sylvia Children's Hospital in Gothenburg, Sweden. The purpose of this study was to study the effect of 1 year of daily straddled weight bearing on hip migration percentage and muscle length in children with cerebral palsy who were non-ambulatory. Participants stood upright in maximum tolerated hip abduction and hip and knee extension 1/2 hour to 1.5 hours per day for 1 year. Controls, matched for age, motor ability, and surgery, were derived from a national cerebral palsy follow-up program. The 3 participants using straddled weight bearing after surgery had the largest decrease in hip migration percentage. 8 children using straddled weight bearing at least 1 hour per day for prevention also improved significantly. Hip and knee contractures were found only in controls. The authors conclude that straddled weight bearing 1 hour per day may reduce the hip migration percentage after adductor iliopsoas tenotomies, or prevent a hip migration percentage increase and preserve muscle length in children with cerebral palsy who did not need surgery. Larger studies are needed to confirm the results. That was Effect of Weight Bearing in Abduction and Extension on Hip Stability in Children with Cerebral Palsy by Martinson and Himmelman. Next, Effects of Positioning on Respiratory Measures in Individuals with Cerebral Palsy and Severe Scoliosis by Sheila Robertson-Littleton of the University of Michigan, Flint, in Flint, Michigan, and Carolyn Hariza, Pamela Mullins, Victoria Mershon, and Christy Bjornson. The purpose of this study was to examine the effect of positioning on respiratory measurements in individuals with cerebral palsy and severe scoliosis. 5 individuals, aged 17 to 37 years, participated in an alternating treatment single-subject design. The following measurements were obtained in supine, sitting, and side-lying positions: oxygen saturation, respiratory rate, heart rate, and chest wall excursion. Level of support for hypotheses varied on the basis of the respiratory measurement and participants' status. Respiratory rate appeared to be the most sensitive to change in the positions. Severity of respiratory compromise and age may be associated with less tolerance for supine position versus sitting and sideline positions. The authors conclude that the use of therapeutic positioning in sitting and sideline positions should be considered as a non-invasive intervention for a population with respiratory compromise. Further research with a larger sample is needed to empirically link specific positions with improved respiratory efficiency. That was Effects of Positioning on Respiratory Measures in Individuals with Cerebral Palsy and Severe Scoliosis by Littleton et al. Next, examination of the Functional Mobility Assessment Tool for Children and Adolescents with Lower Extremity Amputations by Sarah Pierce, Andrea Fergus, Brooks Brady, and Melissa Wolf Burke, all of Shenandoah University in Winchester, Virginia. The purpose of this study was to assess the validity of the Functional Mobility Assessment for children and adolescents with lower extremity amputations. 25 subjects with a mean age of 12.4 years with lower extremity amputations and 12 subjects with a mean age of 10.3 years with typical development were examined using the Functional Mobility Assessment, which includes the timed up and go, timed up and down stairs, 9-minute walk-run, heart rate, and Borg rating of perceived exertion. A subjective interview was also performed, including questions related to pain, walking satisfaction, and participation in and challenges with various physical activities. Significant differences were identified between the control and amputation groups in functional mobility assessment score and three individual items. However, no differences were identified between groups for other items on the functional mobility assessment. The authors conclude that discriminant validity of the functional mobility assessment as a whole is supported. However, reevaluation of the items within the functional mobility assessment is warranted. That was examination of the functional mobility assessment tool for children and adolescents with lower extremity amputations by Pierce et al. Next, relationship of therapy to post-secondary education and employment in young adults with physical disabilities by Christy Bjornson of both the Seattle Children's Research Institute and the University of Washington, both in Seattle, Washington, and Anna Kobayashi, Chuan Zhao, and William Walker. The purpose of this study was to examine the relationship of therapy services to post-secondary education and paid employment in young adults with physical disabilities. A sample of over 1,500 youth from the National Longitudinal Transition Study 2, categorized with orthopedic impairment, including cerebral palsy and spina bifida, was analyzed using weighted sampling multivariate regression. At follow-up, 48% participated in post-secondary education, and 24% had paid employment. Receiving physical and/or occupational therapy at ages 13 to 16 years was significantly associated with higher levels of enrollment in post-secondary education at ages 19 to 21 years. Social interactions and expressive language skills were associated with paid employment, but therapy services were not associated with paid employment. The authors conclude that the results suggest that therapy services that focus on improvement of upper extremity function, self-care skills, and social skills are associated with participation in post-secondary education. Longer follow-up is needed to effectively examine paid employment. That was Relationship of Therapy to Post-Secondary Education and Employment in Young Adults with Physical Disabilities by Bjornson et al. Next, the effects of aerobic exercise on academic engagement in young children with autism spectrum disorder. By Catherine Oriel, Cheryl George, Rebecca Pekas, and Amanda Semen. The purpose of this study was to determine whether participation in aerobic exercise before classroom activities improves academic engagement and reduces stereotypic behaviors in young children with autism spectrum disorder. This study employed a within-subjects crossover design using a treatment condition, aerobic exercise, and a control condition across four classrooms. The treatment condition included 15 minutes of running or jogging followed by a classroom task. The control condition included a classroom task not preceded by exercise. The number of stereotypic behaviors, percentage of on-task behavior, and correct or incorrect responses were measured. The Wilcoxon signed rank test was used to compare differences between conditions. Statistically significant improvements were found in correct responding following exercise. No significant differences were found for on-task behavior or stereotypic behaviors. The authors conclude that these results indicate that aerobic exercise prior to classroom activities may improve academic responding in young children with autism spectrum disorder. These results are consistent with findings in older children. That was The Effects of Aerobic Exercise on Academic Engagement in Young Children with Autism Spectrum Disorder. Next, a description of professional pediatric physical therapy education by Joe Schreiber of Chatham University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Shelley Goodgold, Victoria Mershon, Nushka Remich, Carol Ann Aaron, and Allison Krieger. The purpose of this work was to re-examine the status of professional pediatric physical therapy education in the United States. A task force designed a 16-item survey and contacted representatives from all professional physical therapy programs. Surveys were gathered from 151 programs for a return rate of 75%. Much variability exists across programs in total number of hours devoted to pediatrics, with a range of 35 hours to 210 hours. In addition, almost 60% of respondents indicated that the individual responsible for delivering the pediatric content will be retiring within the next 15 years. These results describe current pediatric professional education and provide numerous opportunities and challenges for the development of optimal professional pediatric education. That was A Description of Professional Pediatric Physical Therapy Education by Schreiber et al. Last this month, a case report. Retrospective case report. Evaluation of pain in a child with pervasive developmental disorder by Anna Mieres of the University of South Florida in Tampa, Florida, and Verena Smallwood and Sheila Nicholson. The purpose of this case report is to describe how a nurse and a physical therapist in an interprofessional school-based clinic collaborated to meet the needs of a child with pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. The child exhibited atypical classroom behaviors and declining student performance. The interprofessional team sought answers for the atypical classroom behaviors and declining student performance. Student sensory perceptions masked and delayed the ability to recognize infection. Cumulative observations by the team generated serial referrals until a diagnosis of dental abscess was identified. In conclusion, an interprofessional team in this school setting generated a positive outcome for a student demonstrating absence of clear indicators of pain or infection, with additional positive outcomes for the clinic. Further studies are needed to 1. Recognize illness earlier in the absence of pain or pain perception in children with a form of autism spectrum disorder, and 2. To develop reliable and valid metrics for pain identification. That was Retrospective Case Report, Evaluation of Pain in a Child with Pervasive Developmental Disorder by Mieres, Smallwood, and Nicholson. Thanks for listening. This podcast is a production of Science Audio, online at www.scienceaudio.net. Please send your comments or questions to PEDPT, that's P-E-D-P-T, at scienceaudio.net. Get the full text of all pediatric physical therapy articles online at www.pedpt.com.